We're holding on Kuf Ayin Hey Omud Bey's 11 lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about the question of whether shibud d'oraisa or not. This that we say throughout Shas, that when a person borrows money or certain other cases where there's a where, or certain other cases where a person owes money or where there's a or different things like that.
Who
Do we
Bay,
say
some day.
Kuf Ayin Hey Omud Bey's 11 lines from the bottom?
Who find Bay?
Kuf
I'm
Ayin Hey Omud Beis, yeah.
know.
So there's the question whether the shibud, whether the fact that the nechosim are to a certain extent considered already are under a lien, and to a certain extent they may be considered to already belong to the person, is that concept d'oraisa or not? We talked about yesterday machlokas Ula and Rabbah on that point. It's relevant, of course, as far as in our Mishnah when we talk about when you're able to collect from nechosim or shabbadim or not. It came up earlier in the Masechta, for example, as far as the question. When there's a debt that was owed to the father and now it's collected after he passes away, does the Bechor get a double portion of it? And the concept of Shibud d'oraisa or not comes up in a lot of different areas of halacha. Eventually, when we get to Seder Kodshim, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to see there's nafka minas in it as far as certain dinim of korbanos and so on and so forth. So far we said that Ula and Rabbah argue on that point. Ula had said that it's derabbanan. Actually, Ula had said that it's d'oraisa, the concept of shibud, and the only reason why we say by a milval peh that you can't collect from nechosim or shebadim is because then the lekuchos, the buyers, are going to lose out because here they spent money on the karka and it's going to be taken away from them where they don't expect it. As opposed to, we said Rabbah had said shibud alav d'oraisa, the whole concept of shibud is derabbanan. So the Gemara continues. Rav Shmuel d'Ami Tavayu. Both Rav and Shmuel say, similar to Rabbah, milval peh ain't a goyva loymin a yoshin v'loymin a lakuchas. When it comes to a milval peh where there's no shtar, you can't collect from the yoshim or from people who bought property from the loyva. My time is shibud lav d'oraisa because they hold that the concept of the shibud is not d'oraisa; it's only d'rabbanan, and therefore that and therefore that the chachamim are not going to allow you to collect from nechosim shibudim where there's no shtar because, as we learned previously. Because then there's a because then there's no coil. So Tosfos actually points out in that so how come then with a shtar, if according to that way of looking at it, why indeed with a shtar would we allow him to collect from lekuchos and so forth? If according to him midoraisa there's no difference, then where do the chachamim get the distinction from? And the answer is basically because if a person is going to lend without a shtar, shows that he, the whole point we discussed before of the reason why you want to have a shibud is shelo delas bifnei loivin. You don't want that people will avoid lending money because they're going to say, I may not have a means to collect. Well, if he lends without a shtar, he's obviously not so concerned about that because it means that he's leaving an opening. The loiva could just as well go and buy prop could just as well go and sell all his property and he won't have an ability to collect it. So therefore. We can say that we can prevent him from collecting from Yoshim as well because obviously he's not concerned about those obviously he's not concerned about those eventualities. So the Tosfos earlier in the Masechta points out mentions that point and adds in greater detail that here they don't mention the point of Ne'ilas Delas that obviously he's not so concerned about being able to collect it. Earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos points out that obviously you don't have a case of Shalitimel Delas Bifnei Loivin because otherwise he himself would have taken the trouble to have a shtar written. The Yad Ramah further explains that the Chachamim didn't want to give the Yoshim a greater strength than Lekuchas. So once the Chachamim are going to say that once the Chachamim are going to say that that the Lekuchas that he can't collect from Lekuchas, we're going to say the same thing as far as Yoshim as well. Then the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Da'amit Havayu. On the other hand, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon and Rish Lakish say Milval Peh Goyva Bein Min HaYoshin Bein Min HaLakuchas. They disagree And they say that you could collect a milvav peh from Yoshim or from buyers. My time is Shibud Daraisa, because they hold that the concept of a Shibud is Minat Torah. So here we had actually, so before Ullah had said that even though Shibud Daraisa, he had said nevertheless a milvav peh can't collect from Nechasim Shibudim because we don't want the Lakuchas to lose out. Here Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are saying that no, you would actually be able to collect from Yoshim or from Lakuchas. Now, what are they doing with our Mishnah that says that not? They can't argue on a Mishnah. So there's a couple of so there is actually a girsa. The Tosfos Reed has a girsa that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are saying you can collect from Yoshim but not from Lakuchas, which would then be the same, which would then fit with our Mishnah. The Rashash gives a different answer that what they mean is on a Daraisa level there wouldn't have been a difference, but Rabbanan, because the Chachamim drew a distinction and said you can't collect from Lakuchas because Pseidon Lakuchas, because Mipnei Tikkun Olam, we don't want that the Lakuchas are going to be discouraged from potentially buying, figuring that it might be taken away from them. Okay. So the same Machlokas Shibud Daraisa or not Daraisa, which again comes up in many different places in Shas. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction on Rav and Shmuel. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Kama, Hachoyfer Bor B'Shusarabim. Actually, it's a Braisa. I mean, we have Mishnayas in Bava Kama, all about the dinim of Bor. But here, this particular thing is a Braisa. Hachoyfer Bor B'Shusarabim. Person digs a pit in B'Shusarabim, Venufal all of Shur, and a Shur falls on him. Now, the classic case of a Bor, as we learned back in Bava Kama, is person digs a Bor in B'Shusarabim, a Shur or any other animal falls into it. He's chayev for the death or the injury of the Shur. But here we have the twist. He himself was inside the Bor digging it, and a Shur fell on him and killed him right there in the Bor. Potter. So then the shur is potter from skilla. We don't say now if the shur had killed him in the regular way, the shur would be chayiv skilla, as we know from the psukim. Here the shur is potter, and even if the shur was muad, the owner is potter from koifer. Veloy oid elashim mesa shur. We did talk about there in the Gemara and Baba Kama, you can have a case where the shur is moored to fall on people in pits that then there might be different dinim, but in any case here we're talking about that it wasn't that kind of moored. Anyway, veloy oid, not only that, elashi mesa shur, if the shur dies from the fall, then the yoshim of the owner of the pit are going to have to pay the value of the shur to the owner, because the shur wouldn't have been killed if it hadn't been for the guy's pit. Now, the point being, in other words, Mela, if the guy himself is alive, okay, he's the one who dug the pit, he has to pay. But here we're talking about the Yoshim may have to pay. So that show, now this kind of thing would be an example of Milval Peh, because there's obviously no Shtar that's been written that says that he's high of the amount, and nevertheless would be high of the Yoshim to pay. So we see that Shibuda Daraisa. So we see that the Shibud exists on a Daraisa level. So how can Rav and Shmuel say that it does not? So actually, first of all, now there is a little further in the sugya. Tosfos points out that maybe we could draw a distinction between a shibud for a milva and other kinds of shibud. Maybe we would say that a shibud when it comes to a person borrowed money, maybe we would say that shibud is not daraisa. Maybe a shibud for other kinds of obligations, as here for nizikin, maybe we could say is daraisa. So the Gemara could have given that answer. And in fact, the Gemara is going to draw distinctions soon, according to the Papa, between different kinds, as far as the strength of a shibud. So the Gemara could have used that answer over here. And the Rosh points out exactly that. The Gemara could have given this answer, but instead the Gemara is going to give a different answer. Anyway, another way of looking at it is that actually in some places, the Gemara calls a chiyuv that it says in the Torah. The Gemara in some places calls it a milva b'shtar. An example of it would be as far as Pidyon HaBen, where a person has a mitzvah to give the kohen five sloim for the pidyon of his bechor, and the Gemara discusses in Bechoros what happens if the father dies. The fact that the son has to be poed to himself, that would be an example. If we say shibud daraisa, we would say because it's considered it's actually considered a milva b'shtar, because the Torah itself gives the chiyuv. In any case, but here we seem to be saying that not. Here we seem to be saying that that even though the chiyuv for him to pay is implied in the Torah, nevertheless it's not considered a milvah b'shtar. Anyway, the point is, but again, if we say that shibuda is not daraisa, then it really wouldn't matter because the Torah itself doesn't draw that distinction. Anyway, the point is, according to that braisa, it comes out that there is a shibud, and therefore the yoshim have to pay. But according to Rav and Shmuel, why should they have to? On a daraisa level, there's no shibud. The answer is Omer Rabbi Ilo Omer Rab Shomer Bedin. And I mean, yeah, of course, the Gemara could have also answered that it's Dirabanan, but Bepashtus, the Gemara doesn't want to answer that it's Dirabanan because the Chachamim make takonis usually for things that are common. This kind of thing, a person is standing there in a pit and gets killed by a shur falling in, is so unusual that maybe the Chachamim wouldn't make a takona on it in the first place. So the Gemara answers Omer Rabbi Ilo Omer Rab Shomer Bedin. Because we're not talking about that that he died right away. We're talking about the case actually went to Beis Din, that the shur died falling into the burr, and Beis Din said the guy's chayav to pay, and then afterwards he died from his injuries. So now his yoshim chayav to pay. Definitely, once Beis Din says that he's chayav to pay, there's no question that a shibud is created. The Gemara says, "Well, hoger katani. What do you mean, though? The Braisa says that the shur killed him." The answer is Omer about a fine shasoi treifa. Fine. What it means is that that he didn't kill him outright. That he made him a treifa. He's gonna die soon. He's gonna die within a year, but he's not dead yet. So he's still able to go to Beis Din and be judged guilty. What do you mean, though? The Gemara says, but you have another braisa that says not a braisa. Va'omer Rab Nachman Toni Tana. Rab Nachman says the Tana should teach us this braisa in a case mesukvore where the guy who the shur fell on him actually died and buried him. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says Poshet, he's standing there in the bottom of the burr. The shur falls on him and then knocks him down and then buries him right there inside the dirt at the bottom of the burr. So the guy really is dead. There's no time to take him to Beis Din and judge him. So the Gemara says, okay, Hosam de Yasvi Daini Apumi de Beira. Fine. So you could answer, according to Rav and Shmuel, you're talking about the Dayanim happened to be sitting there right by the edge of the burr, and they saw it all happen, and they quickly go and judge. Listen, you dug a burr in a Shusarabim, which you weren't supposed to do, there, and now a shur fell in. Therefore, you chay and the shur died. You chay have to pay for the value of the shur, and they managed to give out that psak din before the guy actually dies there in the bottom of the burr himself. And the point is, Tosfos says, in other words, that even though he's on the verge of death, nevertheless it would help. Nevertheless, Beis Din could judge the din. We wouldn't say gavra ktila dayoni. We wouldn't say, well, they're judging a person who's practically dead anyway. No, it would actually mean that in that case they could judge the case. So fine. So Rav and Shmuel. So diasvidana puma debate of achivuhu, and they were mechayev of him a moment or two before he died. So therefore, so you then Rav and Shmuel would agree that the Yoshim have to pay. But maybe you're right. Maybe if the Dayanim weren't there and the case came to Beis Din only after the guy died, maybe indeed Rav and Shmuel would say, at least on a Daraisa level, that the Yoshim would be potter from paying because they're saying that the Shibud is not Daraisa, and maybe the Chachamim wouldn't impose a Shibud on the Yoshim in a case like that. All right, so the Gemara says, Omer Papa, Hilchsa, here's the bottom line halacha as far as this machlokas. Milva alpeh govim in a yoshin ve'en a govim in a lakochas. When it comes to a milva alpeh, where there's no shtar, then you can collect from the yoshin. So in that sense, we do say, in other words, that we do impose a shibud on the, we do impose a shibud, whether deraisa, whether derabanan, we do impose it on the yoshin. Now the Rashbam points out that we did learn a couple of blots ago that dinim about what happens in general when the father dies, even when the father dies, even he says, for example, that he owes the that he owes the, so if we don't know whether he owes the money or not, then we can't necessarily collect from the yesomim. They could always claim that it was paid. We learned yesterday that even if the father says mona l'ploni biyadi, conceivably there might be times where he's doing it only shaloylas bs bonav, that he's doing it only not to make his children appear rich. So the Rashbam refers over here to what he had said previously, that this matter of collecting from Yisoimim is not so simple. It would have to be that we know for a fact that he hadn't paid it, and the Gemara had given a couple of examples previously where he admitted that he's chayav it in a way where we can say that it's not just shaloi lashbia es bonav. He didn't do it just in order to not make his children appear rich, but rather where he says it in a way of haidah, where he's actually making it clear that he really does owe this money, as we talked about yesterday. The Rif and various other Rishonim talk about different scenarios, what that would be. Or another example we said in the Gemara would be, for example, that Beis Din put him in Chayrim for not paying the debt, and he died still in Chayrim, showing that he obviously hadn't paid it. So then, those would be the kinds of cases where we do collect from Yisoimim, and then, as we said over there, primarily you collect only from their karka. Their metaltlin are not really under a shibud, except eventually when the goyim made a takana that eventually, unless of course in the shtar to begin with, he accepted a shibud on metaltlin as well. And then eventually the goyim made a takana that you can collect from metaltlin as well, and then it's different. So anyway, the Papa is saying that even with a milval peh, you can collect from Yoshim within those circumstances over there, about them not being able, about the various cases in which they can't say the debt was already paid. But Rav Papa says that ain't goyvim min alakuchas, but you cannot collect for a milval peh from buyers that from nechosim mishabodim, from property that was sold to other people after the loan was taken out. So the reason is the reason why you say that he can collect from Yoshim is the reason that we have all over Shas. You don't want to close the door in front of borrowers. A person is going to say, you know what, I'm going to lend you money. And then what happens? You might die not long afterwards, or there might be a long-term loan or something. And then meanwhile, I'm not going to be able to collect from the Yoshim at all. Then I can't be bothered to lend you money. Because of the Yoshim, fine. You're going to say the Yoshim have a mitzvah to pay off the Baal Chayv, but let's say they're Ktanim, I can't deal with them in most cases. Let's say even they're Gdolim, then I'm going to have to take a Shavua, etc. Well, yeah, okay, so I'll have to take a Shavua, fine, never mind that. But the point is, if he can't collect from Yoshim at all, he's going to be very reluctant to lend money in the first place. So we have to make a Takana, at least, that he should be able to collect from Yoshim. Tosfos actually points out, really, that's going to be true whether we say Shibuda Daraisa or not Daraisa. Either way, we do have this din that Rapapa is saying that you can collect from Yoshim, even with a milval peh. So here the Gemara is saying it according to the opinion that Shibuda lav Daraisa, but then Tosfos points out that there are other Gemaras where it says that, in fact, the same thing would be true even according to the opinion that Shibuda Daraisa. Tosfos also mentions that when the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Shibuda Daraisa, that's where it needs to be Daraisa, otherwise a certain din is not going to happen. For example, I mentioned before about Korbanus, you have an example, for example, that the Gemara mentions that a person was chayav a korban and then they died, and the Yoshim still bring the Oila. That wouldn't work if Shibud alav daraisa. Then it wouldn't be considered that there's a Shibud to bring that korban anymore. So therefore, so in that sense, we say Shibud daraisa. Or Gemara over here is not necessarily, Rav Papa is not necessarily taking a stand on whether Shibud daraisa or not. Either way, we're going to say you can collect from the Yoshim, it can even be Dirabanan, Kadesh Leitino Delos Lifnei Loivin, so that people are not reluctant to lend money. The Aiden, Govim and Alakuchas. On the other hand, you can't collect from Lakuchas because the less like Kola, because there's no Koil when there's no Shtar, and therefore you don't want the Lakuchas to lose out. You don't want the buyers to, the potential buyers to lose out, that it's going to get taken away from them in payment of the debt, where they didn't even know that there was a debt because there was no Shtar, and therefore there was no Koil. So when we say all over Shas, when we take it as a given, that's how it is with a milval peh, we can't collect from nechosim mishabodim, but with a milval b'shtar we could. Then that's based on this gemara over here. Okay. The Mishnah had said another case. We said that if the malva brings out a shtar that's written, that's signed in the loiva's handwriting, that he owes him money, then he can also collect from nechosim nechorin. Again, he can't collect from nechosim shabodim because there's no koil, because there's no edim on the shtar, but he can still, it is a valid shtar, and he can collect with it from nechosim nechorin, from property that's still in the hands of the malva, of the loiva at the time. So the Gemara says, "Bomini Rabba Bar Nosan me Rabbi Yochanan." So Rabba Bar Nosan asks Rabbi Yochanan, "Ksav Yodi be based in Mai." Now here we're talking about, the Mishnah was talking about where the Malva brings out a shtar, and that's it. We don't know whether we assume the shtar is genuine, but we don't know for sure. Maybe the loiva could counterclaim that it's forged or something. But what would happen? If afterwards the loiva comes to Beis Din and admits that it is in fact his handwriting, so there's no possibility of him saying that it's forged, and Beis Din wrote a henpek on it and said we certified that this is in fact his handwriting. What would be the din? Would we say that now it's considered as though the shtar had edim on it, and therefore we could even say that he could collect from nechosim mishabodim? And as we learned before, Achrayus Tos Sofer, even the fact that the Shtar doesn't say that he can collect from the Chosim Shabodim, nevertheless he could, because we treat it as though the Sofer left out that point. So do we say the fact that Beis Din was Mekayim the Shtar, even though there's no Edim on it, makes it now functionally the equivalent of a full-fledged shtar with Edim, where you can even collect from the Chosim Shabodim, or maybe not. Maybe all it does is that it gives it the strength that it would have had otherwise. Meaning, in other words, that like this, let's say, for example, the shtar did have edim on it. This is how the Rashbam is explaining it. Let's say the shtar did have edim on it. So then if the loiva wanted to come to Beis Din and claim that it's forged, no good, because there's already a kiyum on it. Beis Din has already certified that it's genuine. So maybe now, by the same token, even though there's no edim on it, so now there's no edim on it, you can't say it has the strength of a shtar with edim, but you can say all the kiyum accomplishes is now that now the loiva can't say that it was forged. Or if after he dies, then his yoshin can't claim that it was forged or whatever. Nevertheless, since before he would have only been able to collect from the chosim b'nei chorin, because there's no edim on it, maybe now it's the same thing, but that's what we're saying. Or maybe not, maybe the kiyum makes it stronger. So Rabbi Bar Nosan asks, what's the din? Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers, Af Mishoch Ksav Yodah Be'Beis Din, even though the shtar has been even though the shtar has been certified in Beis Din, and now we know definitively that that's his handwriting, and there's no possibility of claiming that it's forged. Nevertheless, Ein Goyva Elam Nechosim Nechorin, but he can still only collect from Nechosim Nechorin, and he still can't collect from Mishabodim. So the Gemara continues. So Rabba Bar Nosan asks. So Mosiv Rami Bar Choma. So Rami Bar Choma points out that I have a contradiction to what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. A Mishnah says in Masechta Gittin, Shloisha Gittin Psulin. There are three types of get that are posel midrabanan. The im nises havlad kosher, but if she does remarry with one of them, then b'dieved her children from the second marriage are ksherim, and we don't consider them mamzerim. The Elohein, and the three Gittin are Kosav B'Ksav Yodev Einol of Edim. The first one is where the get is written in the husband's handwriting, but there's no Edim on it. And as we learned in Gittin, and as we touched on earlier in our Perek, there are reasons midrabanan why the Chachamim made a takana that they're well. So we talked about actually earlier in the Masechta, earlier in this Perek rather, we talked about the different opinions whether there need to be edim in the shtar. But here we're saying even if there's no edim, then nevertheless, so it's possible midrabanan, but it was given in the presence of edim. So b'diavad, we're going to say edim asira kauti, even according to the mayor who holds edim hasima kauti, that it's essential that the edim of who signed the shtar are the ones who cut off the relationship. They were the ones who make the get be valid. He would agree that if there are no edim written on it, b'diavad, as long as it was given in the presence of edim, it's good enough. So that's the first one. Yesh alav edim ve'ein b'zman. The second one, where there are edim, but there's no date on it. And as we learned earlier in our perek, as we learned in more detail in Masechta Gittin, there are a couple of reasons why the Chachamim made a takana that there should be a date in a get. And the third one, yesh b'zman ve'ein b'el eid echad. There is a date in it, but there's only one aid signed on it. So all those three, Harei the Shloisha Gittin Psulin, then here you have three kinds of Gittin that are possible. Vimnisas of Vlad Kosher, but nevertheless, even though Dirabanan, they're all possible and she shouldn't remarry with them, but if she does, B'dievet, her child will not be a mamzer. The Rashbam refers over here to the Gemara in Gittin that explains why First of all, why the Mishnah has to mention the number at the beginning, at the end, we can count ourselves. So why do we need to say Shlosha Gittin Psulin? And why do we need to say at the end, Harayelu Shlosha Gittin Psulin? And the details of each of these cases, those are all discussed in Masechta Gittin. This isn't really the place for them, but the point is that the point is the point is, Rami Bachomer is going to say that here again, one of the cases is there's no edim on it at all, and we're saying it's possible, and we're saying that it's possible d'rabbanan. And then the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Lozer Omer, afal pi she'ein olav edim, ela shenosne lamifne edim. Even if there's no edim written in the get, but he gave it to her in the presence of edim, kosher. Then it would be kosher. The govim and nechosim mishabadim, and that you could even collect from nechosim mishabadim. Now that's obviously not talking about a get. That's talking about a regular, a different kind of shtar. That even though there's no edim on it, that's only written in his handwriting. The same way as Rabbi Lozer is saying when it comes to a get, edim is sira kauti. It's the edim that see it being given over that caused the relationship to end. In other words, according to him, it's taka not necessary for edim to be signed in the get lahatchila. The only reason, according to Rabbi Lozer, that edim should sign the get is mepnei tikuna olam, because later on, if the edim is sira, die or go to medina sayam or whatever, she may not be able to prove that the get was valid. So then, so at least we have the edim chasima to fall back on. But Rabbi Lozer holds that fundamentally, you don't really need edim signed in the get at all. And he says, and similarly, if it was with a different kind of shtar, then you would actually be able to collect with it even from nechosim b'shabodim. Now the point is that Rashbam explains that Rabbi Yochanan we find elsewhere holds like Rabbi Lozer. He holds that he holds edim esira kauti, and therefore that would work even with other menachos mishabadim. So now the question is, how is Rabbi Yochanan saying over here that even if that when you bring a shtar to Beis Din that's written and signed in the loiva's handwriting that says that he borrowed X amount and there's no edim on it, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying even if you certify that shtar in Beis Din, he can collect only from Nechosim and Echorin? Why? If Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Lozer, then in the case of a get, it would be kosher, and in the case of other kinds of shtaris, you could collect from Nechosim and Shabbadim, then it seems that Rabbi Yochanan is contradicting himself. So the answer is shiny hosam demishask sivo hu deshabed nafshe. The difference is when it comes to a shtar that was given in front of Edim, then you can say from when he wrote it, he was meshabed himself. Meaning because there's no Edim in it in the first place, and his intention was just to rely on Edim Asira. So then we can say that he's putting himself under a shibud, even to the extent that you could collect from nechosim mishabodim. In other words, the edim asira are going to serve instead of edim chasima. And since according to Rabbi Lozer, edim asira work, edim asira karti, then therefore that works. But here here our Mishnah and the question that was asked by and the question that Rabbi Bar Nosson asked Rabbi Yochanan was a case where there were no edim asira at all. So all it is, in other words, the loiva was moide. He admitted to the malva that he's chai of this amount, and he wrote out a shtar just so that he won't be able to later on deny and say that I'm mashata yisibacha, that I was joking or I paid or whatever. But the fact is, it wasn't written to be given over in the presence of Edim. Now later on, they brought it to Beis Din and they certified it. So it still was a milval pet to begin with. So now we don't have the ability to turn it into a milva b'shtar just by certifying the signature in it. So that would be the difference when whether you intended the shtar to begin with to be, you wrote the shtar and planned to give it over in the presence of Edim, then we can say it has the force of a shtar with Edim written in it, given that if we say Edim is sitter karti, like Rabbi Lozer, and like Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Lozer. But because here we're talking about a shtar that was not written in that way, then it's different. The Rashbam brings over here a girsa that existed that mishask suba udashab nafshe, meaning in other words that according to that girsa it would mean that was saying that from when the suba was written, then already he's meshabed himself. But the Rashbam says that doesn't really fit with the sugya over here. We're talking about over here a regular shtar. We're not talking about a ksuba, so therefore it doesn't really fit. Although Tosfos also says that Tosfos also says the correct gusa is meshask siba, not meshask suba, because then that would imply that otherwise it would imply that with a suba also edi chasima kauti, and the fact is that and then. And the fan, because in other words, you would say that by a ksuba you need to have edim signed in it. And the fact is, Rabbi Loza would not say that. Rabbi Loza would say by a ksuba also all you need is edim sira. With that said, Rabbi Negerishim over here in the Gemara and Tosfos elsewhere does bring the girsa with the word ksuba, and they explain it. In any case, the point of our Gemara over here is that there's a difference between whether the shtar was written with the intention of presenting it in front of Edim, where then it has the force of a milvah b'shtar. So fine, it doesn't have Edim written in it, but you have Edim Asira, and as long as you can bring the Edim Asira at any point to Beis Din, then it's good enough, and it has the force of a shtar as far as milvah b'shtar versus where it wasn't planned, where it wasn't designed to be given over in the presence of Edim in the first place. It was just meant to. The loiva had admitted that he owes the money, and now he writes out a shtar to confirm that. So then that milva is still not going to be considered a milva b'shtar, and even if Beis Din certifies the shtar, it doesn't help. That which is what Rabbi Yochanan was saying. Next. The Mishnah had said, Orev hayotze la'achach chitum shtoris v'gomer. We mentioned another case where you can collect only from nechasim and nechorin, was, we said, where there's an orev written in the shtar, but only after the signatures. So again, normally when you have an orev in the shtar, it would usually say, the shtar says, Ploini borrowed from Ploini X amount, etc., with all the other details, and Ploini is the Oriv, and then the Edim sign at the bottom. Here what we have is, we have the body of the shtar, the signatures of the Edim, and then underneath the signatures, it says Ploini is the Oriv. So then we said in the Mishnah that the most you can collect from is Nechosim Mishabodim, and then we had actually, you can't collect from Nechosim Mishabodim, and that was according to Rabbi Shmuel, and then we had Benana saying you can't even collect from Nechosim Nechorin in that case. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav, Koidim Chitum Shoris. Now the din then will be like this. If the fact that the person is the Orev, if it says that before the signatures in the body of the shtar, goivim nechasim mishabodim, then you would be able to collect even from nechasim mishabodim. So, in other words, again, as we learned previously, you can't collect from the Orev first in most cases, unless it's an Orev kablon, etc. Most cases, you have to go after the loiva first. So the scenario would be, Reuven has lent Shimon money, Levi is the Orev. So what we'd say is Reuven has to first take Shimon to Beis Din. If Shimon does not come to Beis Din, if Shimon disobeys the summons, or if he's out of town, or whatever the scenarios are exactly, then Reuven goes after Levi to collect the debt from him. And we're saying that Rav is saying that in that case, because the arevos of Levi was written in the shtar before the signatures, then Reuven can also collect from Nechasim Mishabodim. So if there's property that Levi, the Orev, sold after he became the Orev, and before the loan is being collected, if he sold to Yehuda, then yes, Reuven will be able to collect from Yehuda for the arevos of Levi, and then in turn, then everything will go from there. Then you'll have Yehuda usually will go after Levi because of his achrayos, and Levi eventually will go after Shimon because of his arevos, etc., etc. So then you can collect from Nechasim Mishabodim. La'acha chitum shtoris, but Rav continues, like it said in the Mishnah, if the fact that the person is an Orev, if it says it only after the signature, goyim nechosim nechorin, then you can collect only from nechosim nechorin, like Rabbi Shmuel had said in the Mishnah. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, zimnin omer Rav, but then another time, some other times, Rav said, afilu koidim chitim shoris, that no, even if the fact that it says that he's an Orev is before the signature, sometimes Rav had said, ene goyva elam nechosim nechorin, either way you can collect only from the Orev's nechosim nechorin, so in our scenario, Reuven would only be able to go after Levi. If Levi has sold his properties, then Reuven would not be able to go after Yehuda or any other lekuchas. Well, Kasha the Rav, the Rav. Well, don't we have, then Rav is contradicting himself. Can you collect from Nechosim Mishabodim of an Orev or not? And the answer is, Loi Kasha, Hodekosabe Ploini Orev, Hodekosabe Uploini Orev. There's a difference in the Loshen that was used to write that Levi is the Orev. Did you write, you wrote the body of the shtar, and then at the end of it, you wrote Ploini Orev. Levi is an Orev, for example. Now, without a Vav before it, that's not a Hemshech, it's not a continuation of the Nusach of the Shtar. It's a separate statement. Now, when the Edom are signing the shtar, not necessarily are they signing on that particular detail as well. So therefore, we can say the Edom are testifying that everything that's said in the shtar up to that point is valid, namely that Shimon borrowed X amount from Reuven on this and this date, etc. They're not necessarily also signing off on the point that Levi is the Orev, because it said that as a separate statement without a vav, as opposed to v'hod dekasebe uploini Orev. But if it says and ploini is the Orev, then it means that's part, that it becomes part, it's a continuation of the shtar, and therefore it means when the Edom sign, then they're signing on both the body of the shtar and the Arevus. So when it says ploini Orev, then Rav would say you can collect only from nechoset menechorin of his, only from property that Levi has in his in his possession at the time when the Malva is going to collect from him. And on the other hand, if it says uplani oriv, then you can go even after his nechosim mishabodim. So that's according to Rab. But Rab Yochanan, Amar Rab Yochanan disagrees and says echad zeh ve'echad zeh ain't a goyve element nechosim nechorin. No, either way you can collect only from nechosim nechorin. But afagav dekasebe uplani oriv, even if it says with the vav, nevertheless we would still say that the arevos is enough to make him, to put him on the hook to pay it if the loiva doesn't, but it's not enough to make it that he that we should collect from Nizachos and Mishabodim and that we're going to go to Yehuda and collect from him because of Levi's Arev, says Rav Yechanan. So the Gemara says Masiv Rava. So Rava says that I have a contradiction on Rav Yechanan. Another din that we learn in connection with Gittin, a Braisa says, Edim achsum al shelas shalom beget. If Edim are signing on a greeting in a get, namely, in other words, so a person wrote out a get for his wife, or he had the sofa write it, whatever. And at the bottom of the get, he adds a line. Find out how Pliny is doing. Shalom b'shloim Pliny. Ask how Pliny is doing. So then when the Edim sign, then the Braisa says that's no good. Apostle. The Chashin and Shemal She'elas Sholem Chosmu. Maybe the Edim are signing only on that She'elas Sholem. Maybe they're not signing on the body of the get. They're only signing off. He's asking how Pliny is doing. We're signing off on that he really did say that, but not necessarily on the rest of the get. And Rav Abahu explains that Didimi Fausha Leminei Rav Yechanan. Rav Yechanan personally explained to me that there's actually a difference. She'ilu posel u she'ilu kosher. It depends what the nusach was. Did he write out the get and finishing off with Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael and all that? And then he says she'ilu b'shloim ploni, ask about the welfare of ploni. Then the get would be posel, because then that means that the separate statement and maybe the Edom are signing off only on that. U she'ilu kosher. But if he says and ask about Pliny's welfare, then it would be kosher, because then it means that the Edom are signing on everything that's over there, both the text of the get and the She'elas Shalom. So we see that according to Rabbi Yechanan, there is a difference between whether you put the vav there or not. So Rabbi Yechanan ought to be consistent and say the same thing is true as far as the Orev. There would be a difference whether it says Pliny Orev or U Pliny Orev, like Rav had said. Why is Rabbi Yechanan saying in the case of the Orev that it makes no difference, and either way it's considered that you can only collect from Nechosim B'nei Chorin? So the answer is Hochanami, because of Pliny Orev. You're right, you're right. Rabbi Yochanan meant that it's possible that Rabbi Yochanan meant that you can't collect from Nechosim Mishabodim if it says Pliny Orev. But you're right, if it says U Pliny Orev, then yes, Rabbi Yochanan would have to be consistent with his opinion as far as the get and say that the Arevos extends even to Nechosim Mishabodim. Well, then the question is, so in that case, Yochi Hainer de Rav. Well, then Rabbi Yochanan is saying the same thing as Rav. Then why does the Gemara present it as a machloikas? So you're right, Ema v'chein omer Rabbi Yechanan. You're right, we have to fix up the wording. Not Rabbi Yechanan omer, which would imply that he's arguing v'chein omer Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan said the same thing as Rab, that there's a difference between ploini oriv and u ploini oriv. Now, Tosfos brings up the question, fine, so that explains then why you would collect from Nechosim B'Shabodim or Nechosim B'Nechorin, as the case may be. Where there's the Vav, you can collect from Nechosim B'Shabodim, because it means the Edim signed on the whole thing. Where there's no Vav, you're saying maybe they only sign on the body of the Shtar and not on the fact that he's an Orev. Tosfos points out, but wait a minute, in the case with the Get, we're saying that if you say she'ilu b'shloim ploini, then the get is altogether possible. We don't say that maybe the edim are signing on the body of the get and not on that. So why over here with the orev would we say either way it is a valid arevus, and just we're saying that there's a difference whether you can collect from nechosim shabodim or not. So Tosfos brings an answer that when you say she'ilu, shedoyma shesoyser aget, Tosfos says, it seems like you're contradicting what it says in the get. Because the whole point of a get is, the whole point of a get, after all, is to break the relationship between the husband and the wife. What are you doing, Stam, mentioning over there that you're asking about Ploini's shalom? So therefore, so you have more reason to say that it should passel the get. In fact, there is an explanation that what Tosfos means is that maybe the she'ilu b'shloim ploini, it's not stam ploini, he's actually saying she'ilu b'shloim ishti. Yeah, there's an explanation that he's actually saying, ask about how my wife is doing. So that seems to contradict you. You're writing a get, saying that you're divorcing her, etc. And then all of a sudden you're saying, and ask how she's doing. So that would be more something that seems to contradict the get as a whole. Whereas over here, when you're saying that Shimon borrowed from Reuven and Levi is the Arev, there's no contradiction in it. So therefore, we can say that either way, the Edom are signing off on it, and the question is only whether they're definitely signing off on the Shtar. The only question is whether they're signing off on this point that the guy is the Orev, and that'll make a difference whether you can collect from Nechosim Mishubadim or only from property that he has now, Nechosim Nechorin. The Gemara continues. We said in the Mishnah, Maiso Balifnei Rabbi Shmuel v'chola, there was a case that came to Rabbi Shmuel with a shtar where it said after the signatures of the Edim. So anyway, this was all again when the Orev is before the signatures. The case where the Orev is after the signatures, that was the case we dealt with in the Mishnah, where according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can collect from Nechosim and Echor, and according to Ben Nanis, you can't collect from him at all. So we said in the Mishnah that there was a case came to Rabbi Shmuel, and he paskin, like the Mishnah had said earlier, that you can collect from the Orev, but only from Nechosim and Echorin. And then Ben Nanis had argued that you can't collect either way because the guy is not truly an Orev, because as Ben Nanis had used the expression in the Mishnah, Shaloi al Amunose Hilvohu, he obviously didn't lend Shimon money trusting Levi, because Levi was not an Orev at the time of the signature of the Shtar, he became an Orev only later. So we mentioned the Mishnah like this. We said Rabbi Shmuel had said that you can collect from the Orev. Ben Nanis had said you can't. Rabbi Shmuel says, why? So Ben Nanis says, consider the case, for example, where long after the debt was taken out, Reuven meets up with Shimon in the street and starts pressuring him, choynik, he starts strangling him or grabbing him by the lapels or whatever and nudging him to give him the money. And Levi comes along and says, you know what, fine, I'll be the Orev, leave him alone. Obviously, Ben Nanis says you can't truly hold him responsible as an Orev. Shaloi ala munose hilvahu, he didn't lend him money trusting Levi, because obviously Levi wasn't in the picture when he first lent him money. So the same way, Ben Nanis says that the same thing, when the Orev is written in the Shtar after the signatures of the Edim, same thing, he can't really truly be called an Orev. When he's before the signatures, then yes, you can say that he's an Orev, because ala munose hilvahu, he lent him money depending on that Levi will be the Orev. And then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel had praised Ben Nanis, that if you really want to know Dine Mominus, then you should learn by Ben Nanis. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Babachona, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Afa Pisha Kilis Rabbi Shmuel is Ben Nanis. Even though Rabbi Shmuel praised Ben Nanis and said, you want to really be an expert in Dine Mominus, learn by him, and not just learn by him, Yeshamish, as Shimon Ben Nanis, he used the expression, which literally means physically serve him. As we know throughout Shas, it's not enough to just learn by a Talmud Chacham, you have to actually be Meshamish him, you help, you serve him on a personal level, and that way in Gola Shul Shimusha Shaltura Yosim Limuda, to serve a Talmud Chacham and learn from him on a one-on-one basis, on a personal basis like that, is even greater than just learning from him, etc. So Rabbi Shmuel is praising Ben Nanis's abilities and knowledge in Dine Mominus very highly. Nevertheless, says Rabbi Babachana, Halacha Kamoisei, nonetheless, the Halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel and not Ben Nanis. So in other words, Rabbi Shmuel continues to argue with Ben Nanis, even though he praised him, and the halacha in the end is, and the halacha in the end is like Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, In fact, the Ritva points out there's a logical reason by it, because Rabbi Shmuel praised him about the case of Chanuk, the case where he's forcing him in the street to try to pay, and there you have, there's no signature, there's no kinyan or anything, just Levi comes along and says, let me be the Orev, leave him alone. But in a case where the Orev is in the shtar, then we're going to say that after all, the fact that he's in the shtar has to give it some validity, and therefore we should be able to collect from something. Okay, well, the Gemara asks, is that in fact so? So now, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel is arguing with Bananas in the case where it's written in the Shtar, and we're saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel in that regard, but what about Taka in the case of Chanuk? What about in the case where Reuven is grabbing Shimon by the lapels in the street and saying, Nu, where's my money? And Levi comes by and says, I'll be the Orev. Would Rabbi Shmuel agree with Benanus that he's not truly an Orev because there's no signature and no nothing, and he didn't lend him Alamunasa, he didn't trust Levi to begin with because Levi wasn't in the picture? Or maybe Rabbi Shmuel would agree that in that case that, so would Rabbi Shmuel agree with Benanus in that case that Levi is not an Orev, or would he still say that he is an Orev? So B'chanuk, Mali Rami Rabbi Shmuel, what would Rabbi Shmuel say in this case of Chanuk? So the Gemara says, Toshma, the Amr Rabbi Yaakov, Amr Rabbi Yechanan. We can prove Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Cholokoy Rabbi Shmuel Ach B'chanuk. Yes, as a matter of fact, Rabbi Shmuel does argue, even in the case of Chanuk, that even where he's grabbing him, and even where Reuben is grabbing Shimon in the street, nevertheless, we can still say that Levi is the Orev. The point that Rashbam explains, in other words, the question was, you could say on the one hand, Rabbi Shmuel might say, listen, Levi is seeing that Shimon is in such tsar, maybe therefore he's willing to take on himself the full obligation of being an Orev, or maybe just he wants to save him from the trouble that he's in at the moment, and he's just doing a mitzvah, and therefore maybe he wouldn't be considered an Orev. And the answer is that yes, Rabbi Shmuel would consider him to be an Orev even in that case. The Yad Rama says it would have to be at least that he made a kinyan to be an Orev. Well, okay, now that we know Rabbi Shmuel argues in that case as well, halacha kamoso, ain't halacha kamoso. Well, was the halacha like Rabbi Shmuel in that case or not? And the answer is Toshma, Diki Osa Rovin, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Choluk, Hoy Rabbi Shmuel, Af B'Chanuk. Yes, Rabbi Shmuel argues also in this case of Chanuk, where he's grabbing him, where the Malva, Rovin, is grabbing the Loiva, Shimon, in the street, and Levi comes along and says, I'll be the Orev. Yes, Rabbi Shmuel argues in that case as well, and says that Levi is indeed taking on himself the responsibility of an Orev, and the halacha is in fact like the halacha kamosa after Chanuk, and the halacha is like him even in that, that in fact he is taking on the responsibility of an Orev. So even though it's not written in the shtar or anything like that, nevertheless, he's still accepting that, he's still accepting on himself that responsibility. However, the Gemara says, Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, it's not so simple. Chanuk v'konu miyadei, if in a case of Chanuk, where Reuven is grabbing Shimon in the streets and trying to pressure him to pay the debt, which, by the way, in most cases, Reuven would be over by doing that on a mitzvah. The Torah says, lo siya lo kenosha, you're not allowed to act like a creditor towards a person who's not paying. So the fact that Reuven is grabbing Shimon in the street is not necessarily something you should be doing alfi halacha anyway, but the fact is he did, and we're saying that
7:45.
So the fact is that he has no business doing this, but nevertheless, if he does, then we're saying if Levi comes along and says, fine, I'll be the Orev, leave him alone, then we're saying Rabbi Shmuel is saying that Levi would indeed be the Orev, and the halacha is like him. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the name of Shmuel, Chanuk v'konu miyodei, in this case of Chanuk, where Reuven is grabbing Shimon, only if they make a kinyan that Levi is going to be the order of Mishnabed, only then is he taking a shibud on himself. So this that we just said that according to Rabbi Shmuel, af b'chanuk, even in the case of Chanuk, it would be an Orev. So Shmuel is saying there has to be a kinyan. There is a machlokas rishonim what exactly Shmuel means by this. Does Shmuel mean to paskin like Bananas that normally he wouldn't be an Orev in the case of Chanuk, but if there was a kinyan, then it's different? And even then, you can collect only from Nechasim and Nechorin. But that's according to the Rabbeinu Yonah. And then the Nemuka Yosef says that no, Shmuel is actually saying, like Rabbi Shmuel, that that yes, he would be an Orev, but that Rabbi Shmuel would be saying only if there's a Kenyan. So Rabbi Shmuel would be saying that if there's a Kenyan, then Shmuel would say that's when Rabbi Shmuel is saying that then he would be an Orev. So if there's a Kenyan, then he's Meshtabin, says Shmuel. So the Gemara says Miklal de Orev Ba'alma Loy Boy. That implies, though, that according to Shmuel, normally to be an Orev doesn't require a Kenyan. The fact that we're saying only in this case of Chanuk do we need a Kenyan implies that normally we don't need that. And the Gemara says it's actually not so simple because of Pliga de Rav Nachman, because that in that case then that disagrees with Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, Orev de Beistin who deloy boy Kenyan. Rav Nachman says that an Orev of Beistin does not require Kenyan, which we'll explain in a second what an Orev of Beistin is. So that wouldn't require a Kenyan. Hoba alma boy Kenyan. Normally, in other words, to be an Orev would require a Kenyan. What do we mean by an Orev of Beistin? There's two basic explanations. The Rashbam explains that an order of the Beis Din just means that, in other words, it's in front of Beis Din, and he goes. So the Rashbam doesn't actually say in so many words, but the implication of Rashbam is that that Beis Din trusts him, and therefore that he's Meshabed himself. So that would imply, in other words, that that he's signing in front of Beis Din as an Orev. So in other words, you have Reuven and Shimon are coming to Beis Din to sign the shtar in front of Edim, and Levi comes along as well, and he writes in the shtar that he's the Orev. So the fact that Beis Din accepts him as an Orev, then that's considered that now with that Hano, that Beis Din trusts him, then he's Meshabed himself as an Orev. The Rambam, on the other hand, learns that the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim learn that that Orev de Beis Din means that Beis Din that we're talking about later after the fact, that we're talking about that previously you had Levi was not involved, you had just Reuven and Shimon. Now later on, when the case is being brought to Beis Din, that Shimon is not paying. And Beis Din says, you know what? Okay, in that case, we have to start taking away property from Reuven. We have to start the process of taking away property from Shimon to pay the debt. And then Levi walks in and says, you know what? I'll be an Orev now in order that you shouldn't have to take away from Shimon. So now Beis Din accepts that now after the fact, and therefore that means that then you wouldn't need a Kenyan, because the fact that he has the Hana, that Beis Din is trusting him to be an Orev here after the fact, means that he's Meshabed himself. So two different explanations of what Orev de Beis Din is. Anyway, either way, Reb Nachman is saying that kind of Orev wouldn't require a Kenyan. Hoba alma boy Kenyan, but generally you would need a Kenyan for an Orev to be Meshabed himself. That's according to Reb Nachman, whereas according to Shmuel, we're saying that in general you don't need a Kenyan except for the one case of Chanuk, only with the case where Reuven is grabbing Shimon in the street and demanding from him, where is my payment? And Levi comes along and says, I'll be the Orev, where there we can say he's only doing it in order to save Shimon on the spot from being grabbed a hold of. And then there we would say we require a Kenyan in order for that Orev to be valid. So the Gemara finishes off the Hilchasa. The bottom line halacha is as follows: Orev b'shas matan mos, if he becomes an Orev at the time when the money is given, meaning, in other words, as Benana said, put it in the Mishnah, ala munose hilvohu, he lent him money trusting that this guy will be the Orev. So then the loy boy kinyan, then you don't require a kinyan. And the Rashbam adds that if it's that again, if the Orev is before the signatures, then you could collect even from his Nechasim Mishabodim, provided, as we said on Amar Aleph, that you wrote U Ploini Orev, and if it's after the signatures, then not. Actually, the Girsa that we have in front of us in the Rashbam is that if it's written after Chitum Shtoris, you can collect from Nechasim Mishabodim, but the Rashash points out that that doesn't fit with everything we've been saying so far in the Gemara. It should really have to say Kodim Chitum Shtoris. If you signed it, if it's written before the signatures of Edim, then we're saying you can collect from Nechasim Mishabodim because he became an Orev at the time when the money was given, and because it's written and signed, it's written in the Shtar before the signatures of the Orev. but before the signatures of the Aden. So therefore, so now, because the money is being given and because it's written in the shtar, then therefore now he has the chiyuv of an ariv, and therefore we can and we can collect from him. The Yad Ramah points out that until the actual money is given, the ariv could back out of it. We're talking about though where the money was in fact given. So then you don't require a kinyan. Acha matan maris boy kinyan. But if he became an oriv only after the money was given, so then boy kinyan, then you need a kinyan. Whether it's the case of chonuk, whether it's the case of where the malva is trying to force the loiva to pay, whether or not, even if the Rashbam points out, even if the oriv's name says in the shtar. So then you nonetheless, because it was after the money was given, then you would need a kinyan in order for him to be accepting on himself that he's an orev. It comes out from the way that Rashbam says it, that if he's written in the shtar, even if he's written in the shtar, no kinyan, then he's not an orev. The Rabbeinu Yonah disagrees with that point. But anyway, then the Gemara finishes off. Orev de Bastin like Boy Kinyan. On the other hand, an Orev of Bastin, according to either of the two definitions that we said before, either it means that he became an Orev, that he wrote and signed in the Shtar in the presence of Bastin, that he's an Orev, or that it means that at the time of the loan, or it means that afterwards when Bastin is trying to collect on the loan, then it was trying to force Shimon to pay off the loan, and then Levi comes and says that I'm an Orev. Either way, Lloyd Boy Kinyan, either way, that doesn't require a Kinyan for him to be an Orev. Debahi Hanad, Mehaman Lay. The hana that he has, that Bastin trusts him, gomo meshabed lei. So for that, he's willing to be meshabed himself completely because he has that hana that Bastin trusts him, and that itself is considered something that he got, which therefore we can say that because of that, he's meshabed himself even without a kinyan. The Rashbam brings a girsa over here, Hanach Kulu Boy Kinyan. All of these require a Kinyan, but the Rashbam says that girsa doesn't really fit. What do you mean Kulu? We already dealt with all the possible cases. On the other hand, Tosfos points out on Amud Aleph that you could say it means, in other words, whether Chonuk, whether not Chonuk, Shtar or Baal Peh, either way you require a Kinyan, with the exception, we said, of the one in front of Beis Din. Hadron aloch get poshut or slickle on masechta baba basra. I mentioned yesterday there's a siyum of the Rebbe on or masechta from Tovshin Memhei, and the Rebbe discusses an interesting point over there. So again, we're saying we have this machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Nanas about the case of Chonuk. And then the discussion in the Gemara that we just had in the case of Chonuk, where Reuven is trying to pressure Shimon to pay him, and Levi says, I'll be the Orev, whether that's valid or not. Well, we said, does Rabbi Shmuel argue in that case, and is the halacha like him or not? So the Rebbe actually points out in the later years, the Rebbe used to make siyumim often on Bavli and Yerushalmi of a Masechta together. So here we have, in the Bavli over here, we had the statement that according to Rabbi Shmuel, that we said according to Rabbi Shmuel, the halacha is that even by Chonuk, the guy does become an Orev. And then we had Shmuel saying that you need a Kinyan. The Yerushalmi doesn't mention anything about Shmuel's opinion and about the Kinyan. And then the Rebbe explains that the simple explanation in the Yerushalmi seems to be that actually that according to the Yerushalmi, you don't need a kinyan at all. Just the fact that he says in the case of Chonuk that I'll be the Orev seems to be good enough. So the Rebbe discusses actually that we have a machloikas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Rebbe analyzes it why he can become an Orev even without a Kinyan. Is it because, as we said, because Alamu Nosa Hilvahu, he gave out money based on the guy, or is it because of the Hana? We just said over here again, by Chonuk, he might have the Hana that he's gaining from the fact that the other person's not getting harassed, but on the other hand, the loan wasn't taken out based on him. Anyway, so the Rebbe explains in a Hadron then that it comes out, according to the Bavli, just the fact that he has Hana from that the guy has been saved from Chonuk is not enough to be Meshabed him. You would also need a Kinyan, at least according to some ways of explaining the Bavli, as we said before, according to the Yad Ramah.
How would you make a Kinyan? How would you make the Kinyan?
You make a Kinyan, just that. You take out a Sudu and you make a Kinyan right there on the spot in the street.
With witnesses or not necessarily?
No, you don't need, in general, you don't need witnesses for a kinyan. This was actually in Rambam Shlosha Parakim a day or two ago. In general, a kinyan doesn't require witnesses. You have the concept the Gemara mentions elsewhere. Ivri sadi ela lashkori. The only reason in general why you need witnesses is if somebody tries to deny something. Practically speaking, it's probably a good idea to have witnesses, but it's not strictly necessary. Anyway, again, so there are explanations. Again, as we said before, according to some Rishonim, when Shmuel says you need a kinyan, means, in other words, he's saying, fine, the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel. By Chonuk, however, even Rabbi Shmuel would hold that you need a kinyan. So it comes out, in other words, according to that way of understanding it, that Rebbe says, it comes out that according to the Bavli, just the fact that you have Hana from the fact that a fellow Yid is being saved is not enough for you to be Meshabed yourself as an Oriv, whereas according to the Yerushalmi, it would come out that it is. And the Rebbe discusses that this is, you find a difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi in this regard then. The idea being, we know Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelozeh, but primarily that applied only after the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael. And to a certain extent, we say that even after all the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, later on there was a Golos, and you have Jews in Eretz Yisrael and Jews elsewhere. You don't really have a concept of a tzibur outside Eretz Yisrael as far as the tiniest tzibur and as far as other things. So that would be the difference. Therefore, why the Bavli is saying that you don't have such tremendous achdus among Jewish people at the level of the Bavli, at the level of Chutz La'aretz. Therefore, it's not enough. It comes out, al pi halacha, it's not enough just that you're having hana, that you're saving a fellow Yid from trouble. You need an actual kinyan, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, where in Eretz Yisrael, you have a stronger achdus between Jews, you have a stronger concept of tzibur, then therefore it's enough that you have the hana, that a fellow Yid is being saved from trouble, and with that, you're meshabed yourself, and with that, you're making yourself into an Oriv, even without a kinyan.
That's pretty compelling too. It's pretty compelling data to encourage people to live in Eretz Yisrael.
I guess that's
without
true,
waiting. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And the Rebbe goes on, by the way, in the Sicha to mention that it's very appropriate that the Masechta over here ends with the three Babas. We're now finishing the three Babas after over a year of studying them, and the three Babas in general represent the progression of Golos and the progression towards Geula. There's a Sicha where the Rebbe talks about, based on Azoya, that Bava Kama is the first stage of Golos and Bava Metzia, because it talks about Nezikin and whatnot, and then you're a little more civilized in Bava Metzia, and even more so in Bava Basra, which begins with Ashutfin. So you have a progression over there towards civilization and towards Geula. And here, by the time we get to the end of the three Bavas, we're ending off the Golos. We're getting to the Dinim of Arevus, the Achdus between the Eibishter and the Jewish people, and the Achdus between one Yid and another. And we're saying, therefore, so we end off with this Din of Chonuk, with this Din of a Yid is being strangled and forced to pay off, representing that we're at the end of the Golos, and we feel that strangulation. We feel how much we don't belong in Golos and what a darkness it is. And we're saying that now we're saying that a Yid helps save another Yid from that darkness, and eventually we get out of that darkness and we come to the Gol Amidus Vashlema. Yad Mamash.
Amen.
Mazel Tov.